We're talking today about Saving Arcadia, a story of conservation and community in the Great Lakes. Now, before we get into that book, though, when I look at your background, you've actually written a lot about renegade parenting. So this is kind of moving in a different direction for you, although you do have background in this area. Yeah. So how did you decide to, and is this a permanent turn in direction or?
Yes, well, it's quite a leap from, I have my first two books published are about early childhood education and parenting. And so talking about the Great Lakes and land conservation and ecology and all that is quite a departure, but it's really getting back to my roots because this is what I worked in this field for 20 years. And I have a graduate degree in land resources. So this is more my official background.
Do you think you'll go back to writing about renegade parenting as well? Or is this kind of a permanent thing?
I think it's going to be hard to pin me down because the next book I've written is a ghost story for children.
There you go.
So I might be, I'm going to keep writing. I think we can say that that's permanent. But as far as what the next book will be, we'll have to keep people guessing.
There you go. I like that. So how did you originally become interested in land conservation?
Oh, goodness. I think just growing up, I had a family that took us on hikes and took us camping and took us to national parks because both my parents were teachers, so you could get out in the summers and really spend some time out there. So it was sort of in my family blood, and I think that that's really what inspires people in general to care about the environment, is to find a special place or some little fishing spot or something that they love, because it's that love that drives us. And in my case, it drove me to plan a career in land conservation.
You know, right there, I think I see the connection between renegade parenting and conservation. Probably the best way to teach our children to care about our environment is to kind of let them go and play in it.
Yeah, right. And it's a bit muddy and wet, and they might meet a lizard or something. But, you know, it's all part of life. And giving them some risks to explore, like balancing on a log. My dad loved to balance on logs and jump off them and encourage us to do that sort of thing. And I think that when you begin to engage with the world, some people are scared to step off a path, you know, step off a paved trail or something. And we were always going off into the woods and finding our own way.
And how did you become interested in Arcadia Dunes specifically? Because you're actually from Columbus, Ohio, aren't you?
I am. Yeah, I moved to Michigan when I finished graduate school. And at that point, I had a bad case of being a graduate student where I had no money in the bank left, and I was tired of eating rice and beans all the time. So I was looking for a job, and that one of the jobs that popped up was this tantalizing idea of being a land protection specialist. That was the title, land protection specialist.
Oh, I love it.
And I just drooled at the title because that's what I had really gone to school for, was to save the world. And so I ended up getting the job and moving to Traverse City, Michigan, which is a great spot because there was a lot of lakes and forests and natural land and a lot of unique farmland, too, cherry country and apple country. So I moved there for the job, and I didn't know anything about Arcadia when I moved. In fact, even though, as you mentioned, I'd grown up in Columbus, Ohio, I was a Midwesterner, I'd really never been to Michigan before. So I landed there not knowing much about Michigan, and I was handed Benzie County and eventually Manistee County, which are both on the coast, to take care of and see how much natural habitat I could work with willing landowners to preserve. And what happened was they have these plat maps that show land ownership, and we were always looking for, who might own 100 acres or 200 acres so that we could call them up and have a conversation and see if they might like to put some preservation elements on their land. And at the very bottom of the plat map, there was this huge expanse of land, and it was all under one ownership. It was all the public utility, Consumers Power, or under the umbrella of CMS Energy. And I showed my boss, Glenn Chown, and I said, look at this. And he said, oh, that's only half of it, because the other half goes into Manistee County. And this was the Arcadia land that the book is about. It's this 6,000-acre expanse right on the shore of Lake Michigan with towering dunes and forest and a lot of cherry country, too. So I stumbled on it by looking at a map, and then I was so infused by my graduate school work on, you know, large landscapes is the future of conservation that we just started dreaming that very day.
That answers my next question was going to be, how did you get to write this book? But now I can see how that worked out. You must have spent a lot of time on this, though, because it reads like a novel. You know, people shouldn't get scared of this, of, you know, this is going to be some dry science book. Not at all. I thought it unfolded almost like a suspense story. What happens next? What was it, though, that made you want to put this into a book and capture the stories of all these families?
Well, I worked at the Land Conservancy that did a lot of this nature preservation for 8 years, right when I first moved to Michigan. But during that time, I met someone and started to have young kids, and I was ready to, it was an all-consuming job, and I wanted to move on to the next stage, which is raising young children, and then pursuing the idea that I'd been suppressing all my life, that I wanted to write books. So when Glenn, who is my boss, said, you know, he knew I was going to be leaving to raise kids, he said, but Heather, I know you want to write. Why don't you? This is great. You can write this book about Arcadia. Tell the story of, because it's an amazing story. And so we could capture that history and inspire other people to save their landscapes in their backyards.
So give us a teaser here. What is this book about? Why should people read it?
Right. Well, I call it a land conservation adventure story.
Mm.
It's set in the Great Lakes on the sand dunes, and it's really a 40-year saga. It covers a great span of time about a community, a coastal community, and a corporation, and it's sort of a David and Goliath story.
Yeah.
But there's no bad guys. It's just that there's a small band of dreamers and farmers and bakers and innkeepers, just the regular folks, and then there's a corporation. They're trying to get their attention. And it tells the story through the decades. And as you say, it's trying to read like a novel and have that suspense. Because living through it, I can tell you there was a lot of suspense.
Oh,
would
yeah.
we actually pull this off? And not just for the natural habitat and the rare species that live on the edge of the coast there, but also for community reasons and economic reasons for the farmers that make that part of Michigan their home.
So share some of these stories of these farmers, and because one of the things that as you read this book, you realize how complex it is, that you can't just plant an orchard for 1 year. You know, you have to think generations ahead, and how devastating it is to these families to be suddenly told, we're going to take your land, you have to leave.
Yes, well, the action of this story starts back in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the year I was born, so it's a little hard to write about things when you were just a baby. But I interviewed people who, and some of the same farmers who are farming there today, the same, you may be a different generation, but they were farming this area back in the 60s. And what happened back then was that there were grand plans to buy up this whole acreage and put a pump storage facility on the land, which is similar to what's down in Ludington, pumping up a lot of water from Lake Michigan and putting it in a giant human-made reservoir, and then at a time of peak energy demand, releasing the water down the huge bluff to create electric energy.
Mm-hmm.
So they did. They went ahead and they talked to all the people who owned land, which was pretty much farmers at that point, and bought it out from them. And, you know, legally in the records, it was all fair and square deals. But a lot of the farmers remember feeling the sense of being threatened because public utilities, which is what this is, do have the right to use eminent domain just the way the government does if they need to put in a road or something for the public good.
Right.
So there was this feeling of threat that they had to sell their land or else. And that's where the story begins, which is people being forced to lose their land. And they were paid for it, but then having to move and leave their house and knock down their young orchard trees.
And many of them in these leases that came up later, where they were offered 5-year leases and then 1-year leases, talk about how that changes how you can farm.
Yeah, well, it changes the landscape both for farming and for natural habitat, because mm-hmm. a lot of creatures use farmland. And so what happened is after the Consumers Power at that point bought the land, they weren't right away able to put their plans into action. In fact, things happened that changed their plans. But they leased the farmland back to the same farmers they just purchased it from. And as you say, at the beginning, these were long-term leases, so they could continue to do a lot of the orchard farming. But then over time, they switched to very short leases, which were only 1 year at a time. And trees take a long time to grow, and orchard trees take time to mature before you get the fruit off them, and it's a long-term investment.
Right.
So a lot of people either stop caring for the trees, or they would cut them down and plant something short-term, like corn or something that they could get a quick cash crop off and know that they'd still be economically all right in just a one-year time span. And what's interesting is how that changed the landscape for native species such as birds and different things, because suddenly they were being plowed up and mown up and so on every year, rather than living in a more stable habitat that around orchard trees. There's a lot of good habitat for small mammals and birds and things.
So talk about, we'll tap into your experience here. Why is biological diversity important? And you're mentioning some of these endangered species, the both in flora and fauna, and what was threatened by all of these changes?
Yeah, I think what's neat about this property is that you can almost think of it in three different sections. There's the farmland aspect of it. Then there's big swath of forest, thousands of acres of forest. And then there's the really unique coastal habitat, which is the amazing sand dunes. Most of us love to just play in them and gape at their beauty. But the sand dunes of Lake Michigan, besides being gorgeous, have unique habitat for some pretty rare species. And some of these species, as far as biological diversity, they don't occur anywhere else on Earth. So they're technically called endemic species. Now, there's various arguments and ideas of why it's important to preserve a huge swath of biological diversity. You can come at it from many angles, such as, we never know, maybe something will bring us a medicine that we could use, since most of our pharmaceuticals do come from
plants,
natural plants and so on. So you could come at it from the useful argument. You could come at it from the, it's all part of creation, and therefore we ought to protect it. There's so many reasons why, but what's fascinating is that in our little strip of Michigan on the coast here, there are some plants and animals that make this their, it's their only home on Earth, and that's something so unique and worth saving.
And tell us about community, because this whole process had a very special way of bringing together a community and how community can make changes.
Yeah, I think community is the theme that just runs through the book, because when we were dreaming this impossible dream of trying to save Arcadia, the Arcadia landscape, you can start with a dream with one or two people, but you can't pull the dream off unless you enlarge that to a community level. So we needed lots of people. It needed a community to raise money and awareness, and we needed the community to, once we were able to buy the land and have it be a nature preserve and working farmland, you need people to come together as a community to live as neighbors and work together. And make that work on the landscape. And you need community to be enduring. So I think this is the theme near the end of the book, is that when is land ever preserved? You can buy a piece of land, put a sign up saying this is a nature preserve, but does that really preserve it, just ownership? Because what you need is that continuity of care through the ages. You need to age people and keep taking care of it and then raising up the next generation to continue to love it and care for it. Because otherwise it turns into what people call a paper park, which is when it's protected on paper, but in real life there's people cutting down trees and, you know, timber trespass or all kinds of things that degrade the land. So you need a large group of people to care at every step of the way, and I think that's why this book is so much about building community and really building community across all kinds of divisions. You know, we had urban and rural. We had maybe college-educated and eighth-grade-educated. We had people who love to identify odd sedges and particular biological species, and people who like to go hunting, and all sorts of just different groups. And yet we all came together to try to achieve something.
That's a wonderful story right there. So what is the status today? What do we find if we go to Arcadia today?
Yes, well, I hope you do. Arcadia Dunes is, part of it is open to the public, and part of it we sold back to many of the same farm families who lost the land originally 40 years ago, mm-hmm. or their descendants. So part of it is land that can't have buildings on it, but is working farmland, and you can look at it from the road and see the new cherry trees being planted and so on. And part of it's a nature preserve that has about 15 miles of sustainably designed hiking trails built on it now, and you can walk through the forest, you can take a mountain bike ride or ski through the forest, you can walk up to the top of Old Baldy and gaze at the endless view over the Great Lakes.
And I wonder, as we talk about Arcadia, what would be your message that you would want people, especially in Michigan, to understand about Great Lakes conservation? What should we care about? What should we do? What can we do?
Well, I think that action is the important thing, because sometimes we just get frustrated and we feel hopeless. And this book is all about hope, in that if you care about something enough, find enough people to share that with you, and then the impossible is completely possible. And also to value what's unique here. For example, the sand dunes are an amazingly unique part of our Gold Coast, and you can do a lot on that coast. You know, that in the past, the sand dunes have been used for industrial uses and in car manufacturing and so on. They can be used in many ways, but what kind of uses make sense for going into the future, not just our generation, but far into the future. So thinking long-term and thinking that if it's worthwhile and needs to be done, we just need to reach out to gather more people around us in partnership so we can do it.
These days we're hearing a lot about the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, in the news. I wonder if you had any thoughts on that and how that might affect Michigan.
I think the most effective conservation strategies always involve partnerships with government and private. So, for example, when you mentioned the EPA, there were, just in the story of Saving Arcadia, there was a patchwork of groups from the state of Michigan and some federal money and some private money and private people and public servants all working together. And usually each of those needs to do its role and try to be partnerships with each other. So even if you know, if we're concerned in the news with the different environmental groups being, or government sides of the environment being dismantled or changed, we need to remember that it's one spoke in many, many different organizations that can work together to help preserve the environment.
Well, thank you so much for talking with us, Heather, and thank you for this book. It's an important message.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you enjoyed it.